Welcome to Idle Red Hands, a podcast from Japan about gaming and gamer life. And welcome to Idle Red Hands. I'm Chris.
I'm Wayne.
I'm Lyle. Hey, you know that meme with that woman? She's like, I ain't got no time for bronchitis or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I saw a version of that where it was Kool-Aid and fried chicken.
Right.
Uh-huh. And she's like, I got time for that. It's like, is that racist? I don't know.
Kind of. I guess, I don't know, like, it kind of speaks where as soon as you brought that up about the ain't got time for bronchitis, and then as soon as you said fried chicken and watermelon, I'm like, I kind of know where this is going. So
it was Kool-Aid, not watermelon, but still.
Oh, sorry. It was Kool-Aid and fried chicken. And I'm like,
Whoa, what's with the watermelon?
All right. Anyway.
I didn't say she was black.
Jeez. She's actually a short white woman.
Yeah.
If it's not outright racist, it's kind of say maybe insensitive.
Have you seen that new frozen pasta commercial on Japanese TV?
Is it racist?
It's weird. Yes, kind of. I don't
maybe.
I don't know.
I don't know.
All right. So there's this Italian looking woman sitting at a table, and then there's three guys sitting opposite to her, and two of them are Japanese comedians, but they're dressed up, I think, like Caucasians. They have on these big blonde and red wigs and these big prosthetic fake noses. And then one guy in the end, he's a soccer player who, you know, he's just a Japanese guy. And she's kind of like going eeny, meeny, miny, mo between which one gets to eat the pasta. And they all look really excited. And then she chooses the Japanese guy in the end. And it's not that it's blatantly racist, but it's just kind of, why do you have two Japanese comedians dressed up as white guys? And why don't they get chosen? I don't know. It's just weird.
Wow. I mean, you're talking about a country that still thinks blackface is funny, so
and acceptable. Blackface, yeah. Remember when they hosted the World Cup and the guys dressed up like Ronaldo?
Yeah.
No, I didn't see that. Oh, that's horrible.
I've seen that. I've seen people dressed up as like Obama when during like the first term, or as Billy Banks. You know, you're just like, oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
To be fair, they do dress up like. They'll put on like makeup to kind of imitate like the manga old salaryman or stuff like that.
Right.
And they've got like that shtick of the lines around the eyes and things that they do. So the nation's just crazy about dressing up, I guess.
Yeah. Very true.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I suppose on the one hand, you know, it is an offensive thing, but I don't think I've seen anybody who's doing it to be offensive yet. Just not realizing.
Yeah, but it's kind of like the thing, does the ignorance really excuse it?
No, don't get me wrong. I don't want to say that at all. It's just, it's not out of a sense of meanness. It's just kind of, I don't think the culture as a whole is very aware of it.
Well, you can go into the record store. They still have them here. And say, hey, where can I find Miles Davis? Oh, and under black music. Oh,
yeah.
And Kanye West? Hey, black music?
Yeah. It is kind of weird. Yeah.
So that's serious hour on Idle Red Hands.
Yeah, really.
Oh, sorry. I thought the meme was going to lead to some hilarity.
Oh, that racism.
So, is this being racially insensitive? And hilarity ensued. Yeah, really.
I was looking for no, so I had to make some jokes.
All right. I'll set up that plank for you, Lyle. No, not at all. I don't think so. Please go on.
I already folded up my little joke. Sorry, I've got nothing left for the episode. Yeah. Hey, if I sound like I'm slurring, it's because I'm trying something new with the mic.
And not because you've had three whiskey cokes already.
Because I haven't.
That'll be during the episode. So if I start to slur more towards the end of this, you'll know why.
I was just too close to the mic, guys.
All right, well, we'll move on to part two of Locales Tokyo, and this one will be about the landscapes, or the areas of Tokyo. I mean, there's a lot of places we could have picked, so we'll kind of limit it to about a half a dozen. And we'll have a keyword for each one, and then we'll kind of describe different features of the area. Give our insider's knowledge. So first up is Shibuya, which would actually be the first place in Tokyo that I went to. since the airport is outside of Tokyo. In fact, it's not even in the same prefecture. So the key word that we've decided to give Shibuya is Wakasa.
Which means youth.
Oh, really? I thought it was a whip. What's up?
Wakasa!
Kind of what it sounds like.
Yeah, no. And this kind of really exemplifies Shibuya because that's kind of the center of the youth culture of Tokyo.
That's and Japan.
Yeah, absolutely.
Actually, because we're going to talk about another place, we should point out it's maybe the center of the fashionable youth culture. Or the cool youth culture.
Right. Well, yes, well said.
It all depends on perspective.
Yes. I think we talked about it last episode when we were talking about some of the culture of Tokyo. We mentioned Harajuku, which is right next to Shibuya, but we'll consider it part of Shibuya for this part of the episode.
Yeah, I mean, like, I guess for an outsider, Harajuku is famous because it does have the cosplayers that will then hang out quite close to the station and, you know, pose for photographs and things like that.
I was thinking it was famous more because of Gwen Stefani and her Harajuku Girls reference all the time.
Yeah, but I think, okay.
Yeah, but that would have to be famous first.
Yeah, I'm not saying that's why it's famous, but I'm saying maybe that's probably why a lot of people know it.
Yeah, okay. Maybe.
Man, that was begrudging. I guess, if you have to put it that way.
No. You have to give Gwen Stefani some credit. Yeah. Huh? I think she invented ska, too.
I didn't say that. Anyway, move on.
Yeah, but it, I mean, also, like, just, like, in Shibuya, there's, like, a building that's called Shibuya 109, or Ichimaru-Kyu, and it's pretty distinctive in that it's kind of round and it's on one of those corners.
Right.
But it's not that big, but it's just packed full of these pretty tiny shops, and each one is, like, geared towards young fashion, and it kind of sets, or used to, not so much anymore, but it used to like kind of set all the trends in Japan, and then they would kind of like filter out or move out into Asia and that. And then in Harajuku, then you have all these like little tiny shops, not just like selling costumes, but selling actually the cool fashions of the day.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and one thing about the Harajuku area and the Shibuya area is you can really just walk everywhere. And I don't necessarily just mean like the distances are quite short, and they are, but there's not a lot of a lot of the streets are for walking, and especially Shibuya is definitely not on a grid. Like you've got like things just branching out and winding and twisting, so you can definitely get lost just wandering around.
My experience, not much here in Japan is on a grid.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of a side effect of just a lot of the cities being really old. They were developed before cars existed, so it's just kind of wandering footpaths of a fishing village that just grew and grew and grew. There's not much city planning going on.
Well, and when you say wandering footpaths that grew and grew and grew, you do not mean the widths. You mean the length.
Well, I suppose the width also grew as time went on, but and the city got bigger.
To about barely a car, because, yeah, as you said, it's like sometimes you're just like, how are cars going to fit down this street?
Yeah, and it's and like people have probably seen it on the internet or something, but Japanese cars, they all have a little button inside that you click and it has the side mirrors fold in because there are roads that are so small that you have to worry about your side mirrors hitting the other cars. But yeah, it's a lot of the places, not just Tokyo, any city really, but you walk around inside it and it really does feel like you're inside a twisty, turny maze. And it's a great thing to pick out for any kind of game.
Yeah. And then of course, as we said, the youth. And that's like all hours too. It's not, and you know, you'll see like at three or four in the morning, schoolgirls.
Or older girls dressed as schoolgirls.
Yeah. I was trying to think of a way to say that too. Schoolgirls who might not actually still be in school, you know?
Yeah, but that's where all the delinquents go, like the truants. They'll just hang out in Shibuya. And that's, where the Kogaru, or the Gangaro culture, you know, the Yomamba.
Yeah,
So many names.
For the same thing?
I guess the tanned girls?
Yeah. The ones, come in full circle, the ones who kind of look like they're in blackface sometimes.
Yeah. Actually, yeah. really, really excessive tanning, but with bright highlighted eyes, often with white eyeshadow, so they look, it's, the Yomamba is a reference to a kind of ghost, but some people call them panda girls as well.
Yeah.
Often bleach blonde hair.
And that's a very defiant look, though. They know it can be the makeup can be quite scary or can turn people off, but it's like a defiance to adopt that style.
Yeah, that's what I read too. It's kind of like a conscious rebelling of the Japanese standard of beauty, you know, with the fair skin. So, yeah, the super excessive tanning, yeah, it says I'm not going to conform to that.
I don't see it that much these days anymore. I wonder if it's gone out of fashion.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Actually, not a little bit. Quite a bit. It's gone out of fashion.
But not that they I hang were... out in Harajuku at all, but...
Yeah, you don't see it a lot. The loose socks are pretty much gone.
Yeah.
One of the reasons why that style took off is because they thought it made their legs look longer. Anyway, so socks is definitely something you want to incorporate in your game.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. I think one thing to take away from this is that it'd be pretty hard to be too outlandish in Shibuya.
Right.
So any style you wanted to do there would be probably in keeping with kind of the mentality in Shibuya.
Yeah.
Except for tattoos, probably still not. And I think it'd be very hard for a young Japanese person to get a tattoo because it's hard enough for an adult to get them.
Yeah. Right.
Assuming that they're not in the mafia, of course, the Yakuza. Right.
No, I was thinking, and I don't know why I thought like CSI or NCIS, but you think of kind of those types of shows, and they always have the, and I'm going to use this term lovingly, the freak subculture episode, you know, where they have to like, not
like in the furries episode? I saw that one.
All right. I was trying not to go there. But, you know, they always have this like weird subculture that gets brought into the show or is part of the storyline. And yeah, Shibuya or Harajuku, if you're using Tokyo, that's where you would go. That's where that storyline would be located. And as you said, Lyle, like no fashion there would probably be too outlandish to include. So that's one way to use it. If you're going to set something in Tokyo, you say, wow, I want to use all this, you know, kind of crazy stuff or the loose socks with the glue. That's where you would go.
Yeah, it's also good to serve as showing some of the contrast. I mean, a lot of Tokyo is business, and we talked about it in the last episode about how there's the almost ubiquity of the black business suit all over the place. But
right. You
can have it to where you're walking through this, you're surrounded by businessmen, and all of a sudden there's all these insane costumes and girls with tanned faces and dyed hair. That's just completely 180 from what you were just looking at.
So next to on the other side of Harajuku is Shinjuku,
and the word we've chosen for Shinjuku is, all right, here we go, Togoshi Chosho. Togoshi Chosho.
Yeah, slower was better.
Togoshi Chosho.
No, faster, more slur.
Faster, more intense. Faster,
more
intense.
I don't know what you're talking about. I'm just close to the mic. Which translates to schizophrenia. Because it's schizophrenic.
Yeah.
The reason we chose this word, and actually I said, it's more Lyle suggested this. As far as I know about Shinjuku, I've always viewed it as kind of the business center, you know, tying into what we were just talking about with the business suits all over the place. But Lyle, you were saying earlier that there's a lot more to it.
Well, in the way, it's the busiest station in Tokyo, which would make it the busiest station in Japan and arguably the world. And on the west is where the Tokyo City Hall is, and some government buildings, and some very nice hotels like the Hilton and that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the west. And yeah, it is very business and political. Then when you go to the south, there's one of the biggest department stores in Japan. That's really high end. They've kind of tried to develop that area. And then in the east, then you have Kabukicho, which is it was the sleaziest place in all of Japan. But I think has since been eclipsed by other areas.
Oh, here they were going to say cleaned up. Just cleaned up relatively.
No, it's just other places got worse.
They have tried to clean it up. I mean, there's only so many mahjong parlor fires where all these people die that they can take before they
right.
try to crack down on a bit. Which reminds me, they've just recently cracked down on another thing. It's called it's a high school girl reflexology.
Oh, I saw that article. Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
Holy cow.
I'm scared to ask, but I didn't see. But I mean, I can put those two things together in my mind, and being in Japan, I kind of know where it's leading, but...
I wasn't entirely sure if it was a chain of these shops, but it was several of these shops that were employing girls between age 16 and, like, 26, and it involved, you know, like, massages and reflexology, and I guess for a premium fee, you could, quote-unquote, sleep next to your masseuse.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, she wears pajamas.
Exactly.
So they say.
But, yeah.
Yeah, but that's the kind of place that would be in Shinjuku, and it's still there, actually. But they have tried to redevelop it a bit. But to kind of just give you an impression of this Kabukicho, like, they actually had some really good theaters in that area, like movie theaters.
All right. It was like theaters.
From like, ones that would play, like, the big Hollywood movies to, like, really, really art house theaters. Like, there's one that's... I've never seen something so art house. Where you don't actually sit in, like, theater seats, you sit on couches.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, like, pitch black, and the screen is, like, slightly bigger than he got, you know, in school when they had the projector movies.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I watched, like, Session 9 there, and it was amazing. Like, it was a perfect atmosphere.
That's cool.
But you would go, like, in the afternoon. Movies play a bit earlier in Japan, in fact, and, like, the late shows are actually quite cheap.
Yeah.
Because people rush to get the last train.
Yeah, late here is what? Like, ends at 11 p.m.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you go in the afternoon to watch one of these movies, and then and it's kind of normal walking there. And then when you come out and walk back, then you've got to run like a gauntlet of people asking if you want a massage or if you want to go to some special places. So it definitely changes at night.
I remember walking through Kabukicho with my Japanese buddy, and I saw this guy walking in front of this big, big guy, and I noticed on one of his hands he was missing half of his pinky. So I was like nudging my buddy, "Whoa, look at that, that's awesome. Is he how goes that like that?" He leaned over me, and it's actually pretty good insight. He said, "Yeah, but he's missing a finger. That means he's really bad at his job." I never thought of it like that. one thing to note, if anyone out there is familiar with the Kabuki Theater, Kabukicho is not actually related to the theater. Kabuki means slanted or odd, and it's kind of cho means city, so it means kind of odd city, rather than anything to do with the show.
And then just to the south of Kabukicho is Nichome, which is Japan or Tokyo, then therefore Japan's gay capital. And I guess that's all we have to say on that.
No, actually, what was going through my head was
I was trying to make some kind of gay insinuation for you, but nothing was coming. I'm sorry.
Yeah, exactly.
I've been there. And actually,
he's giving it to us on a silver platter, and we can't come up with anything.
And then, actually, the hotel I stay in when I go to Tokyo is in San Chome. So it's right next to Nichome. Mm-hmm. Sorry, Ni means two, San means three. And, it's actually right on the border. So I'm pretty sure a lot of people who like to go out clubbing in Nichome, they stay at the hotel that I stay at.
And then do you also go out clubbing with them?
Nope. No. But I take the communal bath with them.
Great.
It's a really cheap hotel.
As you would probably expect in a place like that.
So how do you work that into your game?
I think the sento, the public bath, or the onsen, the hot spring, I think can be pretty interesting. Sometimes you see it in gangster movies, like some cultures, like Turkish gangsters, or even like Russian gangsters.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And they'll meet in like a public bath or a sauna or something like that, because you gotta go with just a towel.
So
it kind of guarantees people's safety, so.
Yeah, they, exactly that. There's no weapons and there's no wires that can be worn in there. It's interesting. The Yakuza do it as well. And because they all have these really bright and colorful, often full body tattoos, a nickname for an onsen used at a meeting place is the garden. Because it looks like a bunch of flowers sitting around in the bathtub.
I thought it would have been the zoo with all like the tigers and carp and stuff, you know?
Right.
But no, I think that's pretty interesting and cool. As you said about, yeah, it's a place where you have to meet where everyone is assured that, you know, yeah, there won't be any surveillance or weapons or anything like that.
But I think Shinjuku is also good in that you can run several kinds of games in that one area without having to worry about transportation.
Right.
a lot of times, like, just walking or getting in the car, or getting on the train, the plane, whatever, mm-hmm. can be quite boring for players.
Mm.
So if you want something very compact, very condensed, where, you know, you're just running or there's some sort of immediate chase and you'll want to have a lot of different environments. And we were talking once about the movie Conan, Wayne.
Right.
And you said it was kind of one of those fantasy worlds where the ecologies crammed up against each other.
Well, but yeah, it was either crammed up against each other or they cut out the travel part where things seemed like they were really close, you know, and like, oh, now we're in desert. Oh, now we're in lush rainforest. Oh, now we're in, you know, craggy volcanic mountains. Can I see a map, please, to see how he gets from point A to point B?
Right, so like Shinjuku is kind of like where you have all the city ecologies. They're just right next to each other.
Mm-hmm.
So it can be realistic if you want to run that, where you go from the pinnacle of Tokyo power, and therefore Japanese power, to the dirtiest and grimiest streets in Japan, and you have it there. It's about, I don't know, 15-minute walk.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. That is pretty cool. Because I was thinking
5-minute run if you really want to get there.
Well, actually, that's part of it too. You were talking about like doing a run or a chase through there. This is, we were talking before about how dense is a word that really applies to Tokyo, but Shinjuku specifically is so packed and so crammed. We were talking about Kabukicho, and I mean, when Lyle was saying that you have to walk through a gauntlet of it, you literally have to move through a sea of people to get out of it. There's this one street in there called the Golden Guy, which is, it's only about 2,000 square meters on two sides of a street, but there's almost 300 bars and little tiny restaurants crammed inside there. Imagine that. It's the size of maybe a large house or a mansion, but with 300 separate establishments.
Mm.
It's just, there's so much there.
This is a good time to mention that, like, you'll see a building and there'll be a dozen signs.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, all these tiny signs next to each other. And yeah, on every floor there might be about 5 or 6 bars or 5 or 6 restaurants, and they tend to be like a building of restaurants or a building of bars or a building of
hostess clubs.
Like there's not like a mix or a variety. There's just all of the kind of the same types. And yeah, some of them might be fairly spacious, taking up most of the floor, but a lot of them are just like hole in the walls.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like there are bars where you walk in and if somebody has got their bar stool out too much, you just can't walk by them.
Very true, yeah.
So I'm sure I've told both you guys this story, but when I first came to Japan, I think it was like the first weekend I was here, and mm-hmm. I had roommates, and like the four of us went out, just kind of like walking around, going, checking the nightlife, and we get to this, you know, street with like all these bars on it, and there's a girl handing out flyers for a girls' bar. And we're like, oh, mm-hmm. okay, let's go see what this is. Yeah. And, you know, we follow her for about like a block. I think she spoke a little English. And we, you know, go up like 2 flights of steps to this bar. And I think it was about the size of a kitchen inside a small apartment. Literally. Yeah. All it was about like 5 stools, a glass top bar, and two female bartenders on the other side. Mm-hmm. And that's all it was in there. And some skeezy looking guy sitting in the corner. So, like, we felt kind of bad. So I think we all sat down and we each ordered like a beer. And, you know, after we finished, we looked around and like, and we go and try and leave. And they're like, okay, that's Niman Yen, which is about $200. And we're like, what? Sorry, what? Sorry, we each had a beer. How did this come? 4 beers. It's 4 beers total. How did this come to $200 roughly?
Yeah.
And the guy in the back, it kind of broken and said, you know, in Japan we pay for company.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the kind of place it was. And we're like, we ended up not paying because there were enough mm-hmm. of us we could just kind of like walk out. But I think we left like $40 and then just like walked out. So that was a pretty interesting experience. So yeah, those places can really just be absolutely tiny.
And absolutely sleazy.
Exactly. I mean, it wasn't even sleazy because there wasn't any room to be sleazy. I mean, like, there was no room to do anything except pull out your bar stool and sit down. And that was it.
Oh. Well, I've often wondered that. To this day, I still wonder that about those, you know, buildings where it's just bar stacked on top of bar stacked on top of bar. How all those different places can stay in business. It blows my mind, but...
Yeah, I don't know.
But that said, you know, if it's something like a hostess club or a cabaret or something, that's where one girl can make hundreds and hundreds of dollars in a single night. So it doesn't take many customers.
Yeah, I mean, definitely it's all about the regulars.
Yeah.
Yep.
This just seems really sad.
A little bit. Or very fun for a game.
Yes. Very sad game.
So I was thinking, so just like slavery in another episode, it's like, man, that would be great as a game. Really sucks if that's your life.
Have some fun with it.
I suppose it kind of does pull it into real life because those girls are kind of role playing.
Yeah.
Oh, really? You like Transformers? That's great. I love them too. You live with your mom? Oh, that's so adorable.
Yeah, no, but I think an area like this, and we should say that the 24 bars or hostess clubs or restaurants in that one building is not unique to Shinjuku.
No.
It's pretty much across all of Japan.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, when so many of those types of buildings are just packed in that small area, then it can be pretty cool, and it could make for a really good chase scene, like on foot.
Yeah.
You know, people going in and out of all these different places.
Well, that's kind of a staple of action and more like sci-fi action movies, especially if it's, you know, like sci-fi stuff where it's set in the future. Like I'm thinking of Total Recall again, where ever since William Gibson and Neuromancer, people like to mix Japanese-esque stuff into their science fiction, their future science fiction. And how many times have you seen like people running through all kinds of those like different tiny little stalls or rooms or apartments or stuff like that. And yeah, Shinjuku would be the place to have a scene like that.
Mm-hmm. I always wanted to do a game with some, like vampire or werewolf or some kind of supernatural one where, because the walls are so thin in Japanese apartments, where you're actually just running through different apartments. I just thought that'd be such a cool chase scene.
Oh, you mean because you're a vampire or a werewolf, you can just bulldoze through the walls.
Exactly, blast through the wall and just, you know, as each different room you go through, it's a different scene there.
You don't really have to be a supernatural to do that in some places.
This is true. I could probably handle it myself.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so that's my next plan to Tokyo.
So on the subject of power, we'll move on to the Chiyoda area. And this is where you can see the Emperor's Palace from the Bloomberg office. And we've decided to give this the aspect or the element of Kenryoku, or power.
Unlimited power!
Now I'm thinking about that 90s song, you know. I got the power.
Oh, all right.
The doo-doo-doos didn't get me.
Yeah, you could have just cut right to that. I got the power line.
How about that? You got the right, the fight. You got the power. From the Transformers movie? And nope. Boogie Nights?
Oh, yeah! You got the power!
The only thing those two movies have in common.
Power. Jeez.
No, but totally. Chiyoda is absolutely the power central of Tokyo. And it goes back in the historical sense because, as you mentioned, the Imperial Palace is there. And also in the modern sense, that's where the government building is, and some of the biggest corporation headquarters are there as well.
Right.
All the movers and shakers.
Yeah, so if you were playing like a political game, would you even have to like move from Chiyoda, or would you just kind of be in that area for most of the game?
Depends on how high powered up you are.
Yeah.
It's also one of the cleaner and more organized areas of Tokyo, from what I've read. I haven't actually been there myself, but they say that a full 20% of the whole area is kind of reserved parkland, being the Imperial Palace grounds, and the Yasukuni Shrine, which of course are kept rather immaculate by the city.
Well, seeing as how the embassies aren't that far from Chiyoda, I could see why it would be clean, because if you're going to have, you know, visiting dignitaries and all these politicians, you would probably want, not probably, you definitely would want the area to look, you know, its best. You don't want to put on, like, a bad face for when someone shows up.
It's not a long walk over to Roppongi, though, dude.
Well, still, I don't really think politicians and visiting dignitaries walk, you know?
No, but just to answer the question, would they have to leave the area in a power game? And I think they would, just because they would go to Ginza or they would go to Roppongi.
Right, okay.
So.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you're a mover and a shaker, that does involve moving.
And shaking. Well, but yeah.
Sorry, I had to. No, but I mean, of course, if that is kind of the power central for the whole country, but, you know, there's still, if you want to go out and have a nice evening out, there's places to do that, and Chiyoda isn't exactly the entertainment central. So, yeah.
You know, I read a story, like, during the occupation.
Right.
Like, there's a moat around the Imperial Palace. Every morning they would clean all the condoms out of it.
Jeez.
Because of the GIs hooking up.
Nice.
All right, I take it back about not being the entertainment center. If I were to use this in a game, I would kind of put it as like the Ivory Halls, kind of the untouchable area for it. I don't think that I'd place my player specifically there, or at least if they were there, maybe not in the big power positions, because it just seems like such a separate world from Tokyo. Tokyo is, there's so many different people running around, and but inside Chiyoda, it's clean, it's quiet, and there isn't just kind of the dense population pushing on you like the rest of the city has. It just seems like a different world when you're inside Tokyo. So I would try and portray it maybe as something different like that. This is where the kings live.
I could see that. Yeah, kind of make the, you know, player characters or the characters who go there feel uncomfortable and out of their element.
Yeah, or even make it something that's even just untouchable. You know, if you're playing, for example, Vampire Game, which I think would be an awesome fit for Tokyo, by the way, that's where the prince lives, and you can't even go there. There's guards surrounding the entire area. And then maybe you get invited in once or twice for some kind of mission or some kind of a favor that you owe. And when you go through, it's just the transformation between the outside and the inside is huge.
Yeah, you bring up Vampire. That's where the Ventry would definitely be. Oh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there's a train culture, which is the crowded, and what we discussed last episode was, you know, there's train culture.
Right.
And here is a taxi culture or a chauffeur culture. And it's a big difference, you know, getting chauffeured around.
Yeah.
Getting chauffeured around is different. You view this different city differently. You're not looking at it necessarily through the station.
I was going to say through the steamed up windows of a train packed with commuters.
Very true, very true.
You can actually see the city through the windows of your taxi.
Well, now let's go someplace exciting, and that is Roppongi.
Yes. Actually, Roppongi is my favorite of the areas that we were looking up. And the word we chose for this one is Asobiba, which means place to play.
Because this is definitely the playground of, not necessarily all of Tokyo, but it's certainly the playground for the foreigners in Tokyo.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, young Japan and old Japan. I mean, any type of bar you could find there, any type of sleazy place you can find there.
Mm-hmm. And sleazy is the word for it. There's a lot of, the sex trade is alive and prosperous in Roppongi.
Well, it kind of goes, since that's where like all the nightlife and clubs are, mostly.
Mm-hmm.
But then also like the foreign restaurants and that. Like for a long time in Tokyo, like the Western style restaurants, they would open first in Roppongi. Mm-hmm. It was just kind of like almost like a foreign ghetto, if you will.
Right.
Yeah, and I think this is where a lot of, the foreign movers and shakers live. I mean, like the Japanese ones might want to, you know, live near Ginza or whatever.
Right.
But for the foreigners, they want to live in, and of course Roppongi is quite close to Ginza anyway, but they want to live close to Roppongi. They want to be that short taxi ride because they're not going to take the train to Roppongi. And they have the part. I actually went to a party at the, I don't know, top of a building. Like a penthouse or something.
Roppongi Hills?
No, not there. I've seen movies there.
Cool. Oh, Roppongi Hills is one of the big centers of attraction. It's pretty tall building that is, it's full of different shopping centers and entertainment and a movie theater, apparently. It's one of the parts that I have found really interesting about Roppongi, it has some of the most superstitious elements about Tokyo around it, because I guess there's been dozens upon dozens of companies that have been done in for some kind of embezzlement or money laundering or scandalous thing. Apparently there've been a lot of jumpers off of the building as well, thus gone out the balcony. So supposedly it's haunted and cursed and things like that. And one of the stories for the reasons for this, there's no verification, by the way, nobody knows if it's true, but rumored that it's built on the land where the 47 Ronin died.
Well, it doesn't matter if it's true or not. I mean, that's the story. Use it.
Exactly, and it's cool.
Yeah.
So yeah, I just really like that idea, especially for a game about Roppongi, about just being sleazy. It's the place where all the dirty deals go down. So it's definitely kind of the movers and the shakers, but it's not the pristine ones that are over in Chiyoda. It's kind of the opposite side of the coin.
Yeah, and if people are right now are thinking, hey, what about Shinjuku? And what about Shibuya? Because we kind of like talk about it, and then we go, and it's sleazy. And condoms in the Imperial Palace. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
We're giving Tokyo a pretty bad rep, hey?
Yeah.
Just being honest.
No, but like you can see Tokyo Tower, I could see Tokyo Tower from this party, like this apartment, and all the girls are dressed like hostesses, or for people who are not familiar with that, they would be dressed in kind of revealing cocktail dresses, and we just came from class, so we look like students, but older.
And, yeah. Less disposable income.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, husband. And then there would be like all these like financial guys picking up girls about several notches better looking than they are.
I thought you were going to go half their age, but all right.
There's a lot of the girls that are women, I should say. No, they're older and they, you know, I remember talking to one and she was like, oh, I lived in Europe for X number of years. I wasn't really listening that closely. And then
you were staring at a cocktail dress, weren't you?
No. She was pretty old, and talking about how she moved to Japan because she didn't do it. She didn't move back to Japan then, and she would never do it. And you're kind of like, oh, so you really had nothing waiting for you here, and now you're coming to parties like this.
Hmm.
She's like, oh, have you eaten something? I'm like, yeah. Sorry. Don't really feel like eating at 2 a.m. with you. So.
That was her way of asking you for food, Lyle.
So okay, yeah, it can be a lot of fun.
Or it can be crushingly depressing.
Yeah, so like, I guess when you're young, like Roppongi is like where dreams can happen, and when you're old, it's like kind of where your dreams go to die.
Oh, jeez.
Sorry.
It's not that I disagree, but oh, man, putting it in words.
Honestly, if you hadn't said that, Lyle, that's exactly what I was going to say. That's why I'm laughing. Jeez.
Out of all the areas in, I think something like, I don't know, maybe this is something to use in your game instead of just listening to us like ramble on all places. But, you know, you kind of have to grow up or mature or grow into Ginza. And of course, that means your wallet has to grow up too.
Mm-hmm.
But a normal person would grow out of Roppongi pretty quickly. So it's very immature. Maybe because it doesn't have its own identity. And the thing that Chris was talking about, like Roppongi Hills, is one of their efforts to kind of revitalize it. I guess it failed because they built it on the grave of 47 Ronin
samurais.
And a pet cemetery.
Yeah.
That was just crazy. I don't know what they were thinking. But it's because it's getting the infusion of foreigners, and it's still kind of a foreign area that it maybe can't grow up on its own, and it just kind of stays at that kind of immature stage.
It really is. The whole place is like a big college party.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like a larva. It's a larva. It's hasn't blossomed into a butterfly. Yeah.
No, but I think the way you put it there is it's where dreams are made and where they also go to die. I think it's a very poetic way to put it for a campaign. I think that's a good place to put a game.
If you want to be depressing, jeez.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of adventure that can be done there. I mean, there's people who are there, they've just arrived in the city, if they're Japanese or foreign, doesn't matter. So, you know, they're looking to start a new life, and kind of this is just where to go to meet people and hang out and drink and whatnot. And then you also have the opposite of people who've been here for so long that they have nothing to do and they're stuck there. They can't get out. And there's just so many different avenues for adventures and stories. Yeah, it's great.
They all end up the same place. Desperation.
Well, you know,
they come from all over the city though. You know, you get, it is a party place, you know. You can find a senator slumming it from out of Chiyoda, or you can find, you know, your Harajuku girls hanging out there.
No, I mean, there's a couple good points there. Like, one is, like, that's where East meets West. So you have your gangsters, your Yakuza are going to meet the Chinese Mafia or the Russia Mafia or whoever in Roppongi. Yeah, and the senator slumming it, from the American senator slumming it from the States is going to meet the Japanese politician in Roppongi.
Right.
And because they can do that, they can go to a very nice restaurant that might appeal to Western tastes, but mm-hmm. then they can also take them to the gentleman's club. That would be pretty high end.
Mm-hmm.
Low end would be in other areas.
Or they the night progresses on, yeah.
Yeah, no, and they can go to, like, get a massage and that. But, you know, again, you kind of have the, also to appeal to the foreign taste. If you look at the, you know, those Vietnam movies or whatever, where they show the expats, like the guy that stayed.
Right.
You know, he didn't leave Nam. And, mm-hmm. you know, he's got the stories, but he's got the pain. Yeah, that's Roppongi.
Hmm.
I was there once with, and this 50-something newspaper editor latched onto us and followed us around all night. And he's like, yeah, I got this young wife waiting for me at home. And you're kind of like,
well, then why are you home. Here?
Yeah, and you're like, well, yeah, why are you hanging out with like strangers who clearly don't want to hang out with you?
Because you're better than my wife. Oh, geez.
Getting shot down time and time, you know, just like, go home. Yeah. But you can have that. You know, and there is a little bit, you know, for all the death of dreams and the jadedness, I find that the foreigners will talk to each other a little bit more in that area because it is kind of the foreign playground. Whereas you might meet foreigners in other parts of Tokyo and they might not be as friendly.
Right.
Or they're there not to play around. They're at the bar to make business contacts or have a discussion with the boss or whatnot.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of that, but that's a good point. Yeah.
And finally, since we've gone through this adult playground, we'll go to, I guess, the other playground of Tokyo, and that would be Akihabara, or Electric Town.
Yeah. And I think everyone knows the word for this, or we won't have to translate it. This one is otaku.
I'm waiting for you to translate
otaku.
It.
Yeah, me too.
Oh, so you are going to translate it.
No, that was going to be one of those. This, you know, this person needs no introduction, and then they introduce them. Yeah. So it would be like a geek.
Yeah, nerd, geek. The word basically translates to obsessive. So it's a person who obsesses over something like comic books or animation or gadgetry or things like that.
Or the fictional character.
The Brits have a good word for it, like a train spotter.
I could see that, yeah. Yeah, I was going to say, I think in Western culture, otaku has kind of taken on a softer meaning than it does here.
Yeah. I remember, of course, you know, being a host on a gaming podcast, I am a bit of a geek myself. I remember my wife was saying, yeah, I really like otaku. I think they're really cute. And then we went to the Osaka version of Akihabara, and she saw the real otaku, the guys who are, you know, about 40 years old, but overweight and wearing like a little kid's t-shirt, their belly sticking out. She's like, oh my God, real otaku. No.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, Chris, you got a Ghostbusters t-shirt.
I have an awesome Ghostbusters.
How many times have I seen you in this Ghostbusters t-shirt?
That shirt has earned me more compliments than any other shirt I've owned.
Did those compliments include the word otaku?
No.
Ah, all right.
Mostly nice t-shirt.
No, I think that's a really good point that you made, though, in that there's a lot of kind of reclaiming the word geek and kind of a celebration of geek culture. You know, people are like, Hollywood's mining it,
right.
You know, comic mm-hmm. books to make their movies and that. And certainly Japan is, they're more accepting of comic books. You'll see, you know, more types of people reading comic books and they'll use that for their dramas and their movies.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But there still is a stigma attached to otaku because it's like, you've gone too far.
Yeah.
Because a lot is sacrificed, and that, yeah, there is that obsessiveness, and they definitely can clearly distinguish those, like, what's acceptable and what's, okay, that's too much, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You really shouldn't have a fake girlfriend that is a giant doll.
Yeah, I'm kind of glad you brought that up, because, yeah, obsessive or intense would have been another word that I chose for Akihabara, because similar to those massive buildings that are chopped up into two dozen or three dozen little bars or restaurants or whatever. In addition to like the big electronic stores in Akihabara, you also have those tiny little capsule toy resale shops or computer part shops or robot part shops.
Figurine shops for little anime characters.
Yeah, everything. And there'll be like 10, 12, 20 of them inside a single building, you know, where it's just apartment sized and that's the shop and wall-to-wall stuff.
Yeah, apparently even the blood donation clinic in the center of Akihabara, the staff dress up as anime characters, and when you finish, you get a little package of anime-themed tissues.
You know what that reminds me? When we first started recording, one of our early plans was to go to a maid cafe.
The maid cafe, yeah! I remember that.
And then report on what that was like. And you know something? 2 years later, we haven't done it.
You know why? Because it would be creepy.
Yeah, just no desire.
I think we'd finish up that podcast or that episode and we'd be like, yeah, you know what? I feel kind of dirty now. I'm going to go take a shower.
I wouldn't feel dirty. I just feel like wasting my money.
Well, yeah, that too. All right.
I'm glad we Skype because I can't look you guys in the eyes anymore after that. But yeah, I mean, that's another thing is this is the inception and the most popular place for the maid cafes and really any other specialized quote-unquote cafe that you're looking for.
That doesn't include sex. Probably.
Oddly enough, no.
Yeah.
I guess the easy way to incorporate it into a game is that, yeah, sure, it's Electric Town, and one of the reasons is it's known for all of the electronics that you can get. And I think that's kind of, it's kind of lost some of that because some of the big chain stores like Big Camera and Yodobashi Camera are pretty competitive.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But that is something like, you know, well, if you want anything electronic, if you want to have a quasi-cyberpunk atmosphere, then they would go there and buy it. And I guess you could have like the really nerdy or creepy guy sell it to you.
Yeah, that's that's kind of how I would thought to use it too, you know, because in a lot of modern or cyberpunk games, you know, you have like the hacker. And of course, where would they be? Well, they'd be in Akihabara, you know, sitting behind a desk with this, you know, fat guy glasses, home-built computer and all this stuff going on around him. Or, yeah, that's where you would go to get the parts to build the computer or the electronic gadget that you needed or the surveillance equipment with the little micro cameras and stuff. So, yeah, that's exactly how I thought to use it in the game, too.
The games that I was thinking of mostly when looking through Tokyo was more kind of like the supernatural world thing, like World of Darkness kind of thing. I was seeing Akihabara as a place you would go for occult information and knowledge. Because it does take all kinds. It is primarily an electric town, but it also has the geek culture, the anime, and also some specialty stores.
Yeah, I mean, they have the figurine stores.
Yeah, hey, I could
little voodoo dolls.
Yeah, I could see little voodoo dolls or some of the maid cafes I've seen. Even here in Osaka are like, you know, magical girl or witch themed. You know, I think I saw one that didn't last very long that was like a quasi Harry Potter school. So there's your occult thing. So you're not wrong, Chris.
Yeah, no, I think if you wanted like a really creepy guy that who has like, yeah, maybe you do have to go to them for the occult or the information because they're obsessive and they obsess about certain, you know, the hacker would be in Akihabara. But then he would have the life-size high school girl doll that he would think is real and then you would have to interact with.
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, and that's another thing too, is it's not... If you're looking for getting some of this expertise that might be available there, it's not only money that can be used as a trading thing. You can use some of the more obscure pieces of technology or occult knowledge or something like that.
Or 12-year-old girls.
Yeah, I was thinking that. Or I wasn't going to go that creepy. I was going to say...
Young sister.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's actually part of it. Like, you've probably all heard of AKB48, the girls' dance troupe that comes out of Akihabara.
Heard from them. You cannot escape them.
Well, here at least that's the case. But
I remember somebody's wedding party.
Somebody
making his girlfriend sing an AKB 48.
No. Get this straight. I did not make her sing that. She sang that because her work made her sing that at the fashion show, and it was something she could sing. I did not make her sing an AKB 48 song.
I think you enjoyed it, though. No, but there's... You'll see this on TV shows in Akihabara where there'll be a line blocks long for these otaku who are fans of the group to get up there and spend 30 seconds, not even that, spend 10 seconds with a girl just to like shake their hand or get a CD or something. And they got guards there that are shoving people along because they all want to stay longer than their allotted 5 seconds.
But you know something? You want to know what that's like? Just go to like a comic book convention, you know, in the line to see Adam West or Stan Lee, except imagine like a 15-year-old girl.
I've heard some pretty horrific stories about what happens in those like handshaking not contests, but in those like handshaking meet and greet things.
Yeah, likewise.
I haven't. What happens?
With various otaku putting things, bodily fluids and such, on their hands during the shake.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
You're just, gropings and things like that.
You're just like, oh, wow, dude. Which leads back to the, hey, obsessive. It's like, that is not acceptable behavior.
Maybe if I do this, she'll like me.
Yeah. Or it's more like, you know, if I go to this thing enough, they'll remember who I am, and, you know, they'll realize that they like me, and you're just like, oh, come on.
Oh, what was it? They had this brilliant marketing plan where they were voting for a new girl to become the leader of the band, and it was each CD that you bought allowed you to make one vote for it. And there are people who bought thousands of CDs, literally, to in order to get the votes for their favorite girl.
They haven't done that only once. It's you vote on who's going to maybe be the next. I don't think it was the next number. I think it was who's going to be featured on the next solo.
Huh.
You know, and. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's brilliant for the record companies. They're making so much money off of these people, but it's mind-boggling.
Yeah, I mean, that can be a lot of fun. It can be really creepy in Akihabara. It is, I guess, Twisted Desire.
Yeah.
Yeah, like specialization, you know, specialized mm-hmm. interest, we'll say.
Yeah, it reminds me of the Black Marketeers episode we did, what Chris said about, you know, you won't always be paying in cash, and... We had said in that episode, you could do like a chain. You know, you have to go to this guy with this commodity who'll then trade you for another one, and you have to go to another person. And, you know, you kind of form like a chain of all these illicit goods. And you could do that in Akihabara, and it would just be in one location. And they wouldn't necessarily be illicit goods. It might just be like really random stuff, you know?
Mm-hmm. That's a good connection. I like that, yeah.
I could see that being kind of fun and, as you said, Lyle, creepy. Which
great changeling game would be in Akihabara.
Yeah, well, definitely.
Yeah, I was thinking that too.
I mean, vampire could probably be anywhere in Tokyo, but changeling definitely Akihabara. Werewolf, Shinjuku of all places, in that there's Yoyogi Park, which is a massive park. I would say that's kind of like Tokyo's Central Park.
Well, I was thinking plus all that Gyaru and panda style makeup will cover up fur.
Yeah, there's that too. And big that.
Maybe.
And Mage, where would you set Mage? I guess Mage could be anywhere.
You know, of all the games I was thinking of to play with this, the one I wanted to, that sounded like the most fun would be a Hunter-style game. You know, like the World of Darkness Hunters game, but not actually with World of Darkness. I was thinking more something like Mage or the Marvel or Champions or like Wild Talents, like a low-powered supers game in Tokyo. I could see that being a lot of fun.
Why?
Yeah, I've said it before on many occasions that I think the supernatural hidden world genre is really cool. It's really fun. And all the different kinds of locales and all the different kinds of people and the sheer amount of people that are available in Tokyo, I just think that blending monsters into that almost volatile mix could just be awesome.
If you're going for the hidden world thing, it definitely would be a challenge because Tokyo is so dense. How does all that stuff remain hidden? You know? And which... I'm not saying is a hindrance, but I'm saying more as, like, it's a wrench to throw at your players because, okay, yeah, you know, the supernatural world is real. Yeah, maybe you have to track down these things, and you have to do it without other people knowing about it. And how do you do that? Because there are people everywhere, all the time, always around you. And you can't just, like, you know, slip down an alley or head to, you know, a place that's not going to be full of people because there isn't one in Tokyo.
That's an interesting way of looking at it, because I was kind of looking at it in the opposite direction to where the sheer amount of people and stuff would make that kind of game even more difficult. You know, there's a monster in this block for some reason, whatever, magic spell, and you go there and, you know, there's 1,000 people just standing in this block area. How do you find which one is the monster?
Oh, yeah, that's true.
I was actually thinking, you know, I said low power earlier, but it might be really fun to twist it up as well and do a really high-powered game. We have a really powerful character, but because of the amount of people and how closely packed everything is, collateral damage is something that's really important and really dangerous. Maybe actually that would fit Mage pretty well, because you have lots of power there, but you constantly have to rein it in order to not, you know, just destroy hundreds of people around you.
I think in a lot of these games, the key, and I think it's just the key living in Tokyo and trying to interact in Tokyo, is you kind of go to a place, like meeting places, and that becomes very key and central.
Right.
So it's not so much the travel, which can be where that's where you're going to encounter all the density and the people in your way, and you go to the hole in the wall, or you go to the public bath, or you go to whatever the meeting place is, and that's where stuff happens, and then it becomes like very, very chaotic if there is some sort of chase or there is some sort of interaction that has to break out of that, and it adds to the chaos.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the key is you're always trying to contain it.
Right.
To contain the situation, and that is something to play with.
Well, speaking of containment, could you imagine like a pandemic style game in Tokyo? That would be...
That's over in a day.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, zompocalypse?
Yeah, exactly. Well, zompocalypse or just like, you know, like a virus thing or anything. Just like, okay, yeah, we lose.
Yeah. I think World War Z had something on that. Because it has things from different parts of the world, and I think one of them was Japan.
Yeah, I reckon you say like an apocalyptic kind of thing like that. Maybe a post-apocalyptic could be pretty fun in Tokyo. Because we were talking before about how oftentimes the roots of the city are pretty shallow and how people are so used to living in a city there. If it was post-apocalyptic, there wouldn't really be that many people there who know how to survive, you know? Like, I'm a graphic designer, I'm not a soldier, what can I do? And how you have to get along with all these people who you've spent most of the time in Tokyo ignoring. We talked about how everyone builds like their little personal bubble on the train to try and shut out the rest of the world, but now you can't. You have to deal with them.
Yeah, that would be interesting. It would either be like really, yeah, interesting to explore those characters and what they have to do to survive, or it would be really short where like, hey, we don't have the skills to survive and there isn't anything left and great.
Thus.
Yeah.
Yeah, the whole lack of food thing is going to be a real downer in that game.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, make a roll, see if you can get up. you die of starvation.
Yeah. Again.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I think it would be a real challenge to do like a during the apocalypse game.
Right.
While it's going on.
Yeah, that would be crazy in Tokyo.
Yeah, and what you try to do, because things would shut down and the density and all those things factoring in, the lack of guns would certainly be a real consideration.
Yeah.
So it would go medieval real quick. Because you don't have the firearms and that. Or like, you know, the kind of the weapon technologies would be as accessible as in the States, for example.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So you immediately go to knives and bats and other things that are
a lot more brutal.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
and we mentioned before, people rely mostly on public transportation there. In the States, you know, there's a chance you could find a car and get out of the city, but that would be much harder in Tokyo.
Yeah.
And you'd find it in your driveway. Yeah, where would you find this car? Oh, right outside.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think there's a reason why a lot of post-apocalyptic games or movies or books are set outside of the city is because pretty much anybody in the city is going to die.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah. No.
I mean, look at what happened couple years ago when there was the earthquake and the potential meltdown in Fukushima.
Yeah.
People just panicked and you couldn't buy anything there. Like batteries and toilet paper, like in like a day or two. It was just gone.
Mm-hmm.
All right, on that happy note.
Yeah, I was trying to think of a way to not be as depressing. Yeah.
Figurines and schoolgirls again.
With optional shirts. Yeah.
That becomes the new currency in the post-apocalyptic world. Because there's so plenty of it.
As opposed to modern Akihabara.
Yeah, they don't even notice that there's an apocalypse going on.
But you know, it's weird. Like, we didn't really start out with this, but we've really focused on a lot of the dark side of Tokyo. And if you wanted to play a dark game, there's definitely a lot of material to use in that city.
Now, we may have brought this up on the last one, but I tend to think people who haven't... I'm sure there's dark places in... Not sure, but yeah, there are dark places in every city, and you know, pretty much no matter where you go, you can find dark stuff. But I tend to think that the image of Japan, and especially Tokyo, like, isn't that, because the stuff that most of the rest of the world sees is that, you know, high technology and the gleaming skyscrapers, and so people kind of assume a lot of it, or most of it, looks like that when it really doesn't.
I actually asked, when I went to Tokyo that time, I was talking about when I went through Kabukicho, the reason we were there is I'd asked my friend is because I wanted to see some of the dark side of Japan. I had specifically asked for that, and yeah, there it is.
Yeah.
But I mean, that said, you know, that's what makes a game interesting is conflict and danger and darkness and such, not happy-go-lucky.
Yeah, again, so real life, it's not so much fun. In a game, yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, totally.
All right, that ends our first city episode, which focused on a city near and dear to our hearts, kinda. Tokyo.
You can choose which one, the near or the dear.
Yeah, maybe I was overselling it with the dear. Tokyo's great.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you for joining us on another Idle Red Hands. Check us out online at www.idleredhands.com, idleredhands.com. You can listen to the episodes right there on the website or stream it through iTunes or Stitcher or download it off of DriveThruRPG. You can post comments right there on the episode, or you can follow us on Facebook or on Twitter. You can post on Facebook or join in our forums and post some information there, or even just send us an email because we always love hearing from all of you. Thanks a lot, and see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Sayonara.
Drive-through RPG. We average 9 new titles a day. That's over 60 a week. And we've got well over 15,000 RPG titles online right now. Drive-through RPG. The one true source for RPGs.
Idle Red Hands, recorded in Kobe, Japan. See us online at www.idleredhands.com. Music provided by Tripod Jimmy, and the song was Roadkill. Hope you enjoyed it. See you next time.